everyone, and welcome to the Open Systems Media eCast entitled Four Key Strategies for Enabling Innovation in the Age of Smart. Today's speakers are from IBM's Integrated Product Management team. I'm Warren Webb, Technical Editor for Open Systems Media, and I'll be your moderator today. The current trend in embedded design is to infuse intelligence, or smarts, into products by using information technology to connect and communicate with other devices and the user. This intelligence yields enormous benefits, but not without software complexity, potential security risks, and expanded collaboration network among partners and suppliers. Today's roundtable discussion will include experts in designing, delivering, and managing smarter embedded products. You will learn the tools and techniques that you can use to increase your capacity for innovation while dealing with the potential risks and roadblocks. I'll introduce the speakers and give you their biographies before they begin. First, some housekeeping items. We expect the entire presentation to take about 50 minutes, leaving us about 10 at the end for questions. On the audience console in front of you, please note the Enlarge Slides button, which gives you a larger view of the presentation, and the Forward to a Friend button that you can invite someone to register for this eCast. You'll also find a button that will allow you to enter questions in real time. We'll do our best to answer all of your questions during the closing Q&A session. If you are unable to get all of your questions answered today, someone may get back to you after the eCast with more information. If your question is intended for a specific speaker, please note that at the beginning of your question. If you have a question pertaining to the eCast itself, send it in and someone will help you privately. And finally, this eCast will be posted online within 48 hours, and an audio podcast will also be available. We'll have more details at the end. So are we ready? I'm pleased to introduce our speakers. First is Steve Shove, the Systems Engineering Manager for the IBM Rational brand. He has over 25 years' experience in software development, project management, after-sales support, and marketing. Next is Dominic Lavasali, Program Director for Rational Systems Marketing at IBM. Dominic has 20 years' experience in systems engineering, advanced software development, and process improvement. Our third speaker is Randy Redding, Director of IBM's Worldwide Industrial Sector Software Group. He directs sales programs for IBM's industry solution roadmaps. Prior to IBM, he held several industry sales management positions after starting his career as a process engineer. Our final speaker is Pierre Coyne, Market Segment Manager for Integrated Service Management within IBM's Tivoli Software Group. He is responsible for market strategy, product positioning, and industry analysis. So now I'll hand it over to Steve to give you an introduction and lead the roundtable discussion. Steve.
Thank you, Warren, and welcome everyone to this webcast. We're going to talk about a topic called integrated product management. This is a set of capabilities for addressing manufacturers' pressing concerns with respect to building today's smarter products. And we're going to have a slightly different format today. I'm going to spend probably 15 or 20 minutes up front just outlining some of the customer challenges that are addressed by integrated product management, provide an introduction to the concept, and then we're going to open it up in a roundtable format to the various speakers that we have online, each of whom is an expert in various areas of integrated product management, and we'll be able to dive a little bit deeper into various topics at that point in time. So with that, I'm going to provide just a little bit of background around integrated product management, the type of business challenges that it is designed to address. And if we look here at this first slide, we see that the intelligence within products is dramatically increasing. The statistic we have here about phones is probably a little bit out of date, given that it's based on the year 2008, and I'm sure with the increase in mobile phone sales that this number vastly exceeds 162 million phones, but we all know the intelligence that goes into phones today. In our cars, we don't necessarily think about the various intelligence that's built into the car, but a lot of the innovation that we're seeing today in terms of features and functions that are designed to differentiate one automobile from the next are the result of software and electronics. And these things are all talking to one another. They're connecting to one another, and we're seeing a tremendous increase in the degree of interconnectivity. And we use this term Internet of Things, meaning that these things are all talking to one another or connected to one another in some way. And this presents a pretty big opportunity for manufacturers. It kind of changes the playing field from the previous era of manufacturing, because the ability to use software as a differentiator in terms of features and functions that are presented to the end user is much greater than we've had in the past. So we see a huge dollar number here of opportunity just for appliances like PDAs and web tablets and smartphones and mobile devices. And we've done some studies, and we see that best-in-class product companies are establishing that title as a result of the degree to which they use embedded software. In fact, the best-in-class companies are using more embedded software than some of the laggards in this area. So there are some key customer goals that kind of rise to the top as we think about these opportunities. And in order to leverage these opportunities, what is it that manufacturers of these smarter products really need to do? Well, first of all, with customers becoming more and more demanding, we need to understand their specific needs. We don't want to develop features and functions just for the sake of being different if these features and functions don't meet a particular customer demand. We want to increase market share. That's an obvious goal, but again, we need to deliver the right capabilities to acquire the share that we want from the right target audience. There are a number of challenges that come about when all of a sudden the playing field changes as a result of different ways of embedding intelligence in software, and we need to make sure that we're on top of the various technologies that are coming about. A lot of companies that have been successful in the pass-through manufacturing are now finding themselves transforming into software development companies, where manufacturing is still a major element of their business, but their differentiation is being focused more and more around the type of software that they are able to develop. And as these opportunities for differentiation comes about, so does risk. The more things that can be changed in a product, whether it's software, electronics, or hardware, the more opportunity for problems to creep in. And so we need to make sure that the products that we deliver are of high quality and well-tested and don't hurt our reputation in the marketplace. Every couple of years, IBM conducts a major survey of a number of CEOs of major manufacturers throughout the world. And in the latest CEO survey in 2010, IBM found that 8 in 10 CEOs would characterize that they face significant complexity in the near future. These same CEOs don't necessarily all feel prepared to handle it. So where 8 in 10 expect complexity, only one half expect to be able to handle it. And this leaves what we call a complexity gap, meaning that somehow these CEOs need to understand how to deal with the increasing complexity that's being delivered within their products. And it's not just the products themselves that are complex. Of course, if you think of a mobile phone, you think of the various features and functions and capabilities that are embedded in that phone. But the phone is useless unless it connects with a network. And within the network, there are other challenges of making sure that data can be transmitted between various applications that that share this data. So you have kind of a value chain, an added value of app developers, all of which participate in this overall system. A car is another example of a product in and of itself, but is actually comprised of multiple very complicated systems. And as we develop these products, we have to understand that the life cycle of the product doesn't end when the product is delivered. Given that it participates in a variety of systems while it's in service, we have to think about the downstream aspects of that product being in service during the design stage of the product. We have to anticipate how it might be used, make sure that we can maintain and support that product, and even derive new revenue streams from having that product in service after it rolls off the manufacturing floor. We talked about a car and the various aspects of how the car participates in a system of systems, but this chart is meant to kind of illustrate all of the various ways that a car does more things than you would think of when you just get in a car and go somewhere. So you've got GPS, weather, telematics providing information back to service providers. You've got the ability for responders to address emergency situations through things like OnStar to understand not only where you are when you have the problem, but even how fast the car was going when perhaps you had an accident, so they could tell the severity of the crash. So there are all sorts of degrees of complexity that that need to be compensated for and thought about during the design of an entity that participates in a system of systems. So to address these various challenges, IBM has developed a set of capabilities that we call integrated product management. And to get a handle on what integrated product management is about, we've broken it into four pillars or areas or categories. And these are shown here. So I'll kind of summarize these very quickly. There's business planning and transformation, which is looking at the type of changes to your existing process, your existing way of doing things that might could be improved to make you more efficient and dealing with the complexities of building smarter products. There is the development stage itself, product and systems development. And this is what most manufacturers and product developers are thinking about when they think about product and systems development. So it's making sure you understand the various requirements for the product and being able to model the systems that comprise the product and ensuring sufficient quality at the end of the product development life cycle. Then there's design chain collaboration. And think of this as kind of an infrastructure capability that manages some of the business processes associated with building the product. But it does so in a way that takes into account the fact that many of the designers of a complex product are companies other than your company. Or perhaps you're a company that participates in what we call the design chain. And so just to think back again to a complex example like a car, the design of the car is a single design for the most part, but there are hundreds of companies that participate in that design. So the question becomes, how do you share all of the design data among all of these companies and make sure that this data is utilized by all the various applications that these companies might have? So there's a huge challenge to make sure that there's a single entity that comes out at the end of this process, even though there are a great number of participants. And then lastly, there's asset management and operations. And this is taking a look at the downstream aspects of operation of an asset. When I say downstream, I'm referring to after the development and manufacturing life cycle is completed and the product is put into service. There are a number of ways to establish profitability or increase profitability of that product through service as it's in life cycle, as it goes throughout its entire life cycle. And we also need to take into account the various assets that we may have been utilizing during the manufacturing of the product itself. And these need to be maintained and in a way that promotes the proper assembly or manufacturing of the product itself. So I'm going to just briefly touch on these four areas in a little more detail, and then we'll open it up to some of the experts to talk about some of these areas. So first of all, in the product and systems development pillar, there are four areas of focus. And I mentioned a couple of these, but we'll touch on those again. First of all, there's requirements engineering, which is to make sure that the end product addresses the customer needs and the market needs as you've determined them, and to then share those requirements with all of the participants in the development lifecycle so that everyone's basically working from the same recipe. And any time a requirement changes for any particular reason, whether it's a change in business strategy or a change that has come in from the field that affects the way that the product operates, those need to be communicated to everyone so everyone's on the same page. And so that the tests that are designed to ensure quality are addressing the specific customer requirements as they've been defined initially. And that, if you look at the other side, that is directly tied to quality management. So these two are not independent, but they operate together. And quality management is making sure that you run the right tests and not invent a test that tests for some sort of feature that's not even in the product or that a capability goes out with the product untested to start with. Then there's systems modeling, which is a way of getting the handle on all of the complexity associated with smarter products. These products are becoming so intelligent with so many features and functions that it's becoming more or less impossible for a human brain to capture all of the various scenarios of inputs and outputs that can take place between the various systems that comprise the product. And so this has to be written down in some way. And systems modeling allows all this complexity to be modeled so that a lot of the interaction of the various systems can be tested before entering the detailed design phase. And then there is the need to collaborate and manage all the collaboration that's taking place because, again, this isn't an isolated company or a design team that is working by themselves. There are multiple design teams all working in the at the same time, and so there needs to be some way to make sure that the data and information is being shared appropriately between all the various stakeholders. Design chain collaboration, as we talked about, is looking at how to make available in a global manner the various data that might reside in proprietary systems. And this is going to happen when you have multiple design teams, multiple companies all participating in design. Everyone has their own applications. Everyone has their own particular ways of storing data, and there needs to be a way to pull that out and make it available for everyone so that that data then can be used in an overarching business process for establishing a particular outcome. In asset management operations, as we look at the life cycles to the right of the screen, which are typically the life cycles after the product is put into service, There are multiple ways to tie back to the design phase. You can look at after-sales services that you might design into your overall business process to increase the overall profitability of that product over its lifetime. Make sure that the assets that you're building are understood by the production process and linked to various manufacturing assets that are in the production process, because those two things are related. And whenever there's a particular change that occurs to the product as a result of knowledge or intelligence that we've learned throughout the manner in which it's being used, we want to make sure that we communicate that back to the earliest stages of the design process to adjust the design of ongoing products to take that change into account. So that is a quick, very brief summary of integrated product management, its capabilities, the customer challenges that it is designed to address. And so with that, I'd like to open up the lines to the experts on the call. Again, these experts are Dominic Tavassoli and Randy Redding and Pierre Coyne. And I think I'll start the discussion with Dominic and just ask Dominic, can you elaborate on how these capabilities that we talked about in product and systems development, the requirements engineering, systems modeling, and quality management and collaboration, all tie together? A lot of times we treat them as separate entities in and of themselves, but they really are integrated together in practice. And can you maybe elaborate on that?
Sure, Steve, and hi, everyone, and thanks for the opportunity to address that point. This is really a fantastic opportunity for all companies today when it comes to innovation. We actually just a couple of weeks ago had a joint event with GM about the launch of the Chevy Volt, and they were explaining the challenges they had to move from their traditional innovation, where to produce a new vehicle, it would typically take 5 years, and they had 2.5 years to deliver the Volt. Because of all of the typical reasons, you know, it's now that the planet needs to get greener and smarter, and competitive pressures and so on. And to achieve that, what they really stated they needed was a state-of-the-art platform with integrated disciplines that would allow them to deliver the software and the systems engineering. I mean, really, everything you just talked about, Steve, we see that software is really becoming one of the fundamental pieces of innovation today. You just have to compare I heard a couple of days ago that Sony had stopped producing the Walkman, the CD Walkman, the cassette Walkman. And everyone really thought, well, oh, we didn't even realize they were still producing cassette Walkman, because today everyone's really focusing on MP3 players and such. And when you look at that, really the big difference is all about software. The music's gone digital. It's read in a digital fashion. You're connecting to a digital store. You've got additional apps. And to produce that increasingly complex software, you really do need to raise the bar of the way you design, deliver, and manage that software in particular. And that's why these four disciplines you mentioned, requirements management, quality management, modeling and design, as well as change and configuration management, although they're not new disciplines in themselves, there really is an opportunity today to redesign a common platform that will serve as a basis for those four disciplines and bring them together in a much more automated fashion. And I won't take up all the time here, but I'll just mention that among the benefits there, of course, there's automation. It will allow us to automate the complete life cycle, which means freeing up time for innovation and eliminating defects, but also increasing collaboration between all these teams. Today we're in a world of social media, and collaboration really is a strong point across team members, across geographies, across cultures, and so on. And then, of course, the third point I'd mention is reporting. Today, if we want to innovate, we're going into spaces where no man has gone before. So we need to keep track of our progress, of our success, and for that we need to produce metrics, analysis, reporting, audit reports, for instance, automatically, which show where we're going. So a couple of points there on the importance of that integrated set of capabilities.
That's great. Thank you, Dominic, for that. And as you mentioned, the MP3 players, I can't help but think of even the change to that particular paradigm, if you will, that is coming about with mobile phones, where a lot of music now is streamed to mobile phones. So if you are an MP3 player manufacturer, even your business model is in danger. Things change so quickly. So, Randy, can I ask you to maybe elaborate in this area of design chain collaboration? I know I mentioned briefly that there are some business processes that are provided with this particular capability, but would you be able to elaborate on some of these business processes and how they help enterprises kind of reach outside of their existing boundaries?
Certainly. Thank you, everyone, for the time today. And so we find our clients looking at a variety of business process improvement objectives they have. And some of them are fundamental to launching a core part of their business. For example, one aircraft manufacturer that is entering the market with a low-cost commercial business jet and more of a mass production model. And so there aren't many of those. You might guess who that might be. Nevertheless, the point is they were having some substantial difficulty in getting FAA certification for first flight because they couldn't manufacture and build their prototypes or their first test articles. So at that just very fundamental level, the challenge they faced is being able to bridge the boundaries of their core business functions from design development into source build, operate and maintain. Bridging of those boundaries become very critical and able to just get to the point of where they can introduce the product to market. So the challenges they faced involved some suppliers, design functions that weren't performing up to the standards they needed. And it's at that point that the client looks for help from companies like IBM, where we can show them how they can improve that process, bridge those boundaries, create a fully validated business process that goes across the various functions and the data sources out into the supplier community, and provide some quality assurance such that design release all the way through to validated bills of materials for manufacturing sourcing become more of an automated activity. And the most important thing is it's validated at the point of the process execution, so that the FAA certification that was required was automatically available. This reduced the amount of errors and rework, and ultimately it's measured in terms of the ability to get that product to market and satisfy a backlog of about 150 orders in the first year of this product. So substantial business improvement opportunity that was more of a core fundamental business process, just getting products released to manufacture in order to build and get in the market. Beyond that, we see clients taking a look at existing product sets and how to enhance those in order to drive new sources of revenue For example, BMW has done a tremendous amount of work with analyzing information that comes off of the vehicles as they come in for service. With up to 80 CPUs on a vehicle, they're able to mine just a tremendous amount of data around product, not only product function, but customer usage of that product. You know, how fast, how far, how, you know, how severe they drive, or that combined with the feedback they get on how the client likes the use of some of the software-driven features, for example. The point is the ability to mine that data, so using business processes that, that expand you know, from customer input all the way into all the way back into the product development process, they're saving about $100 million a year in the way they're looking at you know, deploying a business process that hasn't been available up until the latest intelligent and instrumented types of products that we see in the market today.
Okay, that's great. Very interesting. You're speaking about data after the product is in service. That's a good segue to take it over to Pierre to ask Pierre. That's one way of trying to, you know, understand how your product is operating and maybe change some aspect of the design, but there are probably also other ways to increase innovation after the product is in service. And can you elaborate on that area? Pierre, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you, Steve. Just to cite a couple of examples, as you mentioned earlier, you know, the life of the product doesn't end after it rolls off the production line. And as products become increasingly complex with, you know, embedded software and you know, incredibly complex and instrumented moving parts to them, maintaining those products either as traditional maintenance or even creating new business models becomes a critical opportunity for manufacturers. And oftentimes, that maintenance process becomes very expensive. It's oftentimes very reactive, or there's scheduled maintenance, and a lot of money is spent on that. So just to cite one example of an engine manufacturer that moved from a service after sale type model to a full-blown kind of business service offering. The manufacturer produced high-end engines for various industries, and oftentimes the temperature of some of the parts actually exceeds the melting point during operation of those engines. So for safety reasons, they needed to ensure the, you know, proper and timely maintenance on the engines. They needed detailed records of the engines as it was built, so as it was manufactured in that state and all the parts that played a role and how to maintain those, as well as it was maintained. Including all the parts that have been changed over time and when and why and by what person. So much like with, you know, printers, where the cost is in the ink, for this manufacturer, most of the cost is around scheduled maintenance for the engines. And some of the parts are actually, you know, over $100,000 to maintain, so they needed a better means of maintaining the engine so that they can reduce those costs. So with a combination of asset management and predictive monitoring capabilities from IBM, they've been able to instrument the deployed engines and the various parts with sensors and keep accurate records on how they're being used and maintained. So as a result, they can now offer engines as a service, moving to what they call a power-by-the-hour type model, effectively allowing them to charge for those engines based on usage. So the ability to track how the engines are being used and the status of those engines lets them do condition-based maintenance where they monitor for a specific condition that then triggers the maintenance process. So if the conditions are met, meaning the engine's been used for a certain number of hours versus being idle for a portion of that time, they can then trigger the maintenance process automatically. And so because they don't have to schedule maintenance on a regular basis, they've been able to dramatically reduce their cost for maintenance, giving them the ability to provide engines to clients at a much lower cost than outpositioning their competitors while greatly improving their you know, revenue streams, effectively creating new revenue streams by being able to charge using this model. And at this point, they're actually managing about 54,000 engines as well, which represents about 60% of their engines, with a new power by the hour type service model. So it's another kind of means for manufacturers to really kind of innovate and create new models. And as companies look to even go beyond those types of models, offering services that bring together these new smart products that are interconnected with information technology, there's additional opportunities as well. And that requires kind of an integrated product and service, kind of a life cycle approach, which is what we're talking about here.
Okay, excellent. Can I go back to you, Randy, with another question? You talked about at a high level some of the business processes that are valuable in this area of design chain collaboration. Can you talk a little bit more about how those are specifically instantiated and how, you know, I mentioned this idea of getting data from various application stores, you know, no matter where they exist. And can you talk a little bit about some of IBM's capabilities for, I guess there are two things. One is instantiating and managing this business process, and the other is accessing all the data in these disparate data stores. Any thoughts on that? Can you elaborate?
Sure. It's been a very big pain point within many of our clients today. So we have had quite a bit of experience and have looked at the repeatable patterns that our clients look to us to solve. And so we've built many of those into what we refer to as the products and service framework approach to consult with our clients on how to solve these problems. So, Steve, what you're kind of referring to is a horizontal process problem, but then a vertical problem associated with where's the data sources and where does it need to move in order to allow that business process to function.
Yep.
And so the approach IBM takes is obviously looking to help a client achieve those business objectives. As I mentioned, the aircraft company, you know, we start there. What are the real problems and what do you need to address? What do you need to improve? So that process gets defined, and that then spans usually multiple applications, from a PDM system, maybe multiple PDM systems, especially as you start to deal with supply chains. You have also the analytical systems that are involved. Those usually get to a point of release to business systems around manufacturing, you know, ERP, or potentially health, safety, and environment, depending on the kind of product and regulatory environment. But, you know, that example of three or four different data sources that need to be integrated. And so IBM's approach is through our design chain management solution. We define the business process at the high level, execute it across a neutral process serving engine, in this case WebSphere Process Server. And that process is executed by pulling data, reaching into the different data sources, and you know, coordinating or choreographing a process and moving the data along a validation step, some approval steps, some release steps, some transformation steps that allow it to be then, you know, pushed into the receiving systems, as is the case with that aircraft manufacturer. And at that point, it's gone through the kind of validation and formatting such that the sourcing technicians or sourcing agents within the company can, you know, can immediately look at the bill of material, release it for bid and quote, and begin to, you know, bring products in for manufacturing. That issue sounds, you know, pretty important, of course, to go across that business function. But perhaps even more importantly is as the smart products are becoming more predominant in our clients' environment, even just bridging across the design functions of electrical, mechanical, and software development at that very fundamental level is a key competency that many companies need to, you know, need to build, and those systems don't integrate well. So just even at that, you know, you might think of it as almost that sub-process of how do you have a coordinated electrical, mechanical, and software development processes is going to become key in the future.
Yeah, I hear a lot of the changes that might occur in one area of the product that affect all these other engineering disciplines. And need to be communicated to the various disciplines in an efficient manner, so all the stakeholders that are participating in the process are notified of the change and can then take an appropriate action on their end. So I guess there's some sort of engineering change capability that that you provide as well within the design chain collaboration.
Yeah, that would be certainly one of the think of it as a sub-process within the overall business function, but absolutely engineering change, release to manufacturing. We can go as far as some export validation processes. You know, it just depends on the extent at which the client has got the, you know, the primary pain point.
Okay, good. That that topic is often associated with something we call systems engineering, and there are multiple definitions, it seems, around systems engineering. But we, within integrated product management, like to kind of break out systems engineering from product development and treat it as kind of an upfront part of the overall design, because, as I mentioned earlier, the need for the ability to simulate the function within systems. So, Dominic, can I come back to you again and ask you maybe if you can speak a little bit about the role and function of systems engineering in product and systems development?
Mm-hmm. Sure, Steve. Systems engineering is actually, for me, one of the fundamental disciplines for building that smarter planet in the next couple of years. It's not really new. If you look at an organization like the INCOSI, INCOSI's been around for quite a couple of years now, the International Consortium on Systems Engineering. And systems engineering really is all about making sure you design and build the right products the right way, in a sense. So we're going to be talking about disciplines like requirements engineering, for instance, that you mentioned earlier on, Steve. What's the blueprint for what I'm delivering? The example I always take is, if you don't know where you're going, the chances are you'll never get there. And that's what requirements engineering is all about, defining what it is we actually want to build and reaching an agreement across all the different stakeholders and making sure that you have traceability on those original requirements, whether they're customer needs or regulations, constraints, all the way down into implementation and then all the way to the testing. But then you also have disciplines like model-based systems engineering, where you're going to be modeling and designing the system. And of course, modeling and requirements go very much hand in hand, because you might be producing a high-level set of requirements, then modeling the high-level system to get a better understanding, come back and refine the requirements, go back to the model, refine that, maybe do some simulation, come back to requirements and so on, which is something we've been calling the systems engineering sandwich for quite a while. It's really important, and although a lot of organizations are aware of systems engineering, it's still a discipline that's picking up speed in industries today. For instance, if we were to talk to customers in aerospace and defense, they'll roll their eyes and say, well, of course, systems engineering is the fundamental discipline for our success. I'm paraphrasing there. Please don't spam me and say that's not true. But well known and highly popular. But if you get into more commercial activities, whether we're talking about, say, energy and utilities or telecommunications or retail and so on, it can be a new discipline. And we are seeing a lot of interest from many different industries into systems engineering to help them build smarter products, for instance, a luggage conveyor system in an airport today is really reliant on systems engineering to be designed properly. You're completely rethinking the way you design and deliver systems that might have been completely mechanical before, and now you have to all of a sudden integrate lots of subsystems and lots of additional functionality and take into account the fact that it's evolving really fast, and we'll probably have to be compliant in 5 years' time with technologies and standards that don't even exist today. So how do you do that? Well, that's all about systems engineering, which helps you control the cost of the project, which helps you reduce the risk of the project, and helps you coordinate all the different stakeholders. But since we're talking about systems engineering, I'll also just mention systems of systems. Now, for those of you who don't know what a system of systems is, just imagine the level above, where today, okay, you've got a car, which is a system, but then that car is connecting via an OnStar-like system to satellites and to call centers through phone lines. And it's also electric, so it's connected to the smart grid, and in the future will be connected to smart roads that will be controlling traffic. And that's really a system of systems. You're getting to a whole new level of complexity that is one of the most promising endeavors that we'll be seeing over the next couple of years, because this is really what a smart grid is all about, for instance, or what a smart city is all about. All those fantastic ideas that we're hearing about, but the thing is, today, no one knows how to deliver those. I suppose the closest is, once again, in the defense industry, where there is some experience of systems of systems, and that's what a lot of eyes are turning to. And when you get into the actual disciplines, well, we're talking about systems engineering on steroids. So I think systems engineering really has a lot of fantastic potential for it in the upcoming years as people turn to those best practices and build on them to be able to design those systems of systems of the future, or the Internet of Things, as you mentioned it earlier on. And that's where, in particular, I think I really like the solution we have in IBM, which does systems engineering, but also the software engineering, so you can have a consistent, seamless solution for both, and not only address the paramount systems engineering part, but also the really hot nest of innovation, which is software.
Yep, it's kind of exciting when you think about how fast things are changing now, and the opportunity for things. But you know, capturing that opportunity requires certainly a degree of discipline to avoid crashing, falling on your face.
Well, exactly. I mean, if you look at everyone can see the potential and the prize. But then there's also the other side of the coin, which is, no pun meant, Chair, but the challenges, which are, well, what about my revenue? I'm talking about innovation, and how can I make sure I don't start lagging behind when it comes to my competitive positioning? But also, what about my brand image? We've seen issues, automotive companies or chemical and petroleum companies have had, where glitches today can really hurt your brand image, and every company knows how expensive and how valuable your brand is. It's the most valuable thing a company has. But then you're also looking into legal liability. If I'm building a smart medical device and it fails, can I be sued? will I go to prison? And then even, you know, just for my own personal career, I'm building an HDTV and someone on my team decided to include a component which happens to be open source. What happens then? Are we going to be sued? Is it my fault personally? Was that my due diligence? So there's lots of ramifications there that we're really, with IPM, Integrated Product Management, we're trying to provide solutions there to help you minimize all those risks and stay in control of innovation and reduce the cost of innovation.
Very interesting stuff. Now, I know that there are some questions that have come in from the audience, so at this point I'd like to thank the participants in the roundtable. And we will all be here with open lines. So, Warren, if you want to, can you give us some of the questions that have come in from the audience, and we'll try and answer as many of those as we can in the remaining time.
Sure. Yeah, we're now at the Q&A portion of the eCast. We invite all of our audience to feel free to submit questions during the Q&A, and we'll try to get to them. The first question, is for Steve. IPM sounds a lot like PLM. How do the two relate to each other?
That's a good question. Those on the call, if you're in product development or a manufacturing company, you've probably heard of product lifecycle management, or PLM, which is a domain, if you will, a market-recognized domain that is focused on managing a product's life cycle from the initial idea conception through to the retirement and disposal of the product. And that's the same life cycle that we've been talking about with IPM. And really the only difference is simply a nomenclature. IPM is a set of capabilities within IBM that are focused on addressing what might traditionally be thought of as the PLM problem. And we're deliberately trying not to define PLM because a number of industry analysts already do that, and we're not trying to change the definition. A lot of companies think of PLM as CAD-CAM or the detailed mechanical and electrical computer-aided engineering, and that's fine as well. A lot of the industry analysts are expanding the definition, but IPM certainly covers the entire domain of PLM, and we're even looking at extensions outside of what's traditionally associated with product development into supply chain operations, how you tie in supply partners as the product is being developed, and even impact on your own sales and marketing, and how you may need to have sales and marketing tied into the overall plans for the design of the product. So I'm not trying to say IPM is a competing domain. It's not. It's really IBM's set of capabilities as we've described them today to address what is typically known in the industry as product lifecycle management.
Okay, very good. I have a question here for Dominic. What products does IBM provide specifically supporting IPM?
Thanks. And that's probably not just a question for me. It's actually a question for all the panelists. But in a nutshell, IBM has a complete portfolio of solutions which address all of the pillars of IPM, from the business transformation, which we didn't really talk too much about, because in particular there's going to be a lot of consulting, a lot of high-level management services to help organizations transform into something that will be to a successful company for innovation. But we definitely have solutions around the four systems engineering and software development domains that we mentioned earlier on, for requirements engineering, modeling, quality management, and change in configuration management, including the market-leading and award-winning products in that domain, including Rational Doors, Rational Rhapsody, Rational Team Concerts, and Rational Quality Manager. But also lots of fantastic products in the design chain collaboration space and in the asset management and operation space, including the Tivoli product line, for instance, Maximo. Randy and Pierre, any products you'd want to call out in particular?
Okay. Very good. This question is for Pierre. Given the increase in embedded software in today's products, can you comment on areas where manufacturers are linking software design and test and support capabilities to improve product design over time?
Yeah, sure. Happy to. In fact, you know, Dominic was talking about, you know, smarter cars and how cars have tremendous amounts of software embedded into them these days. And, you know, one of the key areas where there's an opportunity is in, if you look at, for example, all the dealers or the field support type staff, whether, you know, in other industries, it's the connection point back to the application development and testing type tools and requirements gathering type tools. So what we've done is make a conscious effort of integrating across this set of integrated, you know, product management capabilities, right, linking the component parts so that information can be shared across them. One key area is in our asset configuration management tools. We can look across all of the different assets, the parts that make that up, the software that is embedded in those, and the current configuration that's being, you know, for instance, updates that are being made at the dealers for a particular VIN, for example. And as problems or enhancement opportunities are identified by the folks that are actually working with those smarter products and maintaining them, that information can be fed back directly from, for example, the Maximo tool that Dominic referenced to the, you know, the Rational tools for requirements gathering. Another key area that is of value potentially for continual improvement, but certainly for managing problems as they develop, is one of the service desks. So we've created a common platform for managing all of those assets, plus handling all of the service requests, the incidents, and the problems that come in. So if you take a car as an example, if that car you know, has a software glitch, we've actually integrated the service desk with the fix tracking tools on the application side, so that all of the information that's collected can automatically be fed back to the application testing teams to replicate that problem and, you know, release new configurations that can be leveraged by the folks that are actually deploying that. In addition to that, however, in some cases, you know, manufacturers will be maintaining their own products. So if a problem comes in, you might want to route that directly to the field support staff, or increasingly as products become more instrumented, interconnected, and with back-end IT systems to provide a full-fledged service, you might need to route those problems to the IT staff that supports the system. So ultimately, you need to determine, you know, is it an application problem? Is it something that the field should support? Is it an IT system problem? And be able to route workflow. So we've made efforts to integrate the workflows there so that they can automatically be routed to the right people, prioritized, and then also fed back to the different teams that they either manage the applications or manage the product design, collecting all that information and feeding it back to those systems.
Okay, I have a question here for Randy. How can innovation be used in existing markets to expand them in a fashion that fits the true definition of innovation, going beyond creativity?
All right, I will attempt to answer this. This came in from one of the attendees, the Alcatel-Lucent company. And in fact, that is certainly a challenge. Obviously, customers have built up a fairly substantial fixed processes and concepts of how to serve the core markets they're in. But we find several clients looking to us to consult with them on how they can become, you know, breakaway from the pack types of companies. Company in the telecommunications industry, for example, is really looking to us to help them just be much more responsive to customer requirements, customer requests, and re-engineering the processes and the tools at which they respond to those requests in a way that would set them ahead of the pack. So, you know, I guess a little bit of a gray area there. Is that truly innovative? The point is it's maybe an evolutionary step, but the intention is to make them viewed in the market as an innovation leader in being able to go customize products, customize features. And areas that obviously some of the brightest in the company need to maybe think about is, you know, how do they provide higher levels of security such that countries and rogue organizations might not be as successful at attacks on our internet. Some of you might have heard recently that China for 18 minutes took over all the .mil and .gov domains. So things like that can be done with core markets to secure our communications, secure our overall stability as a government is going to be a truly innovative approach to something that we have never faced before in our markets. So those are some examples. We're running out of time. I could go into others, but I think there are a number of areas where the clients are looking to us to help them become breakaway leaders, and that's the area that we would like to help not only create new markets for them, but create a new market for IBM in terms of our ability to be trusted advisors in that area.
All right, great. Well, that brings us up to our time limit for today. I'd like to thank our presenters, IBM, and all of you that are following along remotely. If we didn't have time to address all of your questions, someone may get back to you offline. This eCast will be posted at the URL shown on your screen within 48 hours. You can also search the podcast section of iTunes for Embedded eCast to find audio-only versions of our eCast. On your screen, you'll also find contact information for our speakers. Thank you all for attending. Goodbye.